All right. Obscenity warning. Liel's already on his fourth mezcal as we begin this JCC Manhattan live show, so who knows what'll happen. It's best if you send your kids out of the room.
By the way, that's a great metaphor for Israel in general.
Sofas on which to crash.
Sofas on which American will crash if there is trouble in the America.
It's the original Airbnb. Just come. Hello, J. Crew, live on tape from the JCC Manhattan. This is Unorthodox, the world's leading Jewish podcast. I am your host, Mark Oppenheimer, joined as ever by Tabloid senior writer Liel Leibowitz.
Ahlan wa sahlan.
Hello. And deputy editor Stephanie Butnick.
Hi.
Hi. Our Jew of the week is the world's smartest man, and now the man with the biggest family tree. He's a writer, he's a Jew, he's my cousin and yours. He's A.J. Jacobs. He also, yes, indeed. This is also a very special night for him and for us because he was our first ever Jew of the Week. At our Gentile of the Week, you thought he was Jewish, but he's not. He's the actor you know from Alpha House or also from playing Cantor Duvid on Transparent. It's Kobe Labee. Thank you. Plus, we're going to play some fun games of Jewish geography with the audience, and we're going to have listener mail in which our listeners and our audience take on the all-important question, is it mishmash or mishmash? You guys all need to be thinking about that, okay? Because we got more mail on that than anything else.
Because you're either right or you're wrong.
No, but the mail got like weirdly personal.
It did. It was like...
But people were mad.
People were
really... At me.
They
people
thought,
are never mad
well,
at me.
Because you're from Great Neck, so they feel like...
What does that mean? Whatever, we'll get to
we'll get to that. We'll get to what that means.
Can you imagine Jews being mad for no reason about trivial shit? It's like, really... Bizarre.
Also, we just want to thank all of you for being here because we heard a rumor that Michelle Obama is across town at Temple Emmanuel. So we... they all run for the doors.
Yeah, so sorry you couldn't get tickets to that, yeah. But thank you for being here. Can we also do like a count of who's related to me by blood or marriage or friendship at this point?
Arms in the air. Wow.
Wow. Thank you.
Before we get to our guests, I don't know, like what's... Well, I mean, the most important bit of Jewish news this week, I know for Liel, is that Robert Guillaume died today, which is very sad. Benson.
How many people in this room remember Benson?
There we go.
Are five people.
That's our demographic. Benson was a sitcom.
Yes, it was.
On ABC.
That I would not know because I grew up in Israel where a very big surprise.
But
I tell you,
this.
In the Israel,
next we had, tell me that Mark went to Yale.
I grew up in Israel, and we had one television channel, which was lovingly named Channel One, you know, and it had the budget for precisely one American television show per year. This is not a joke, by the way. And really, they could only afford one, you know, non-original actual TV show. And so when I was
like, the rest of the time was just fights in the Knesset.
Basically,
like all Knesset.
I'm
all
not
the
even
time.
Kidding. Every day ended with something called the daily Bible verse, in which it was the camera is zoomed in on a Bible, and you saw a finger like going through Vayomer Adonai El Moshe. It's like, this is TV, guys, and this is like the 80s. Like, not
wait, is this why you went to film school?
This is pretty much, yeah.
You're like, I'm inspired.
And so when I was in third grade, Benson was the show, so it was a very big hit for Israelis. But the next year, we got another show, and it featured, let's see if you remember the name of the show, it featured a bionic man whose name was Steve Austin. Do you remember what the show was called?
$6 Million Man.
The $6 Million Man. Now, do you understand why the $6 Million Man had a very different title in Israel? I'm not joking.
What did they call it?
It was called The Man Worth Millions. How many millions? You don't need to know that. So, a lot of millions for that
somewhere
man.
Somewhere between 4 and 7 million.
More than 5, less than 10.
And then the following year was Love Boat, and then I'm like, I'm moving to America. This is amazing.
Did the news that Gopher had made it to Congress cross the pond?
Absolutely. Every person who went to school with me would be like, Gopher, he was the congressman, right? Like, everyone would know that.
So farewell to Robert Guillaume, who started off as the butler and then became lieutenant governor which actually is strangely plausible these days in government. Like, you know, you were a butler, welcome to the cabinet. I don't know what else is going on. Anything else going on in your life? Stephanie, anything going on in your life?
Nope, got nothing.
Writing thank you notes.
A lot of thank you notes.
Are you done?
No, because, well, I like to put like stickers on them, and I like the stickers to correspond to the personality of the person I'm sending it to, unless I don't really know them, in which case they sort of get like a bland combination. But like, you know, like only specific people get cats on theirs, because I have to know that it's someone who will appreciate that.
I see. I don't even remember if we got you anything. I think...
You did not, since...
Did we not?
No, I got a beautiful carafe from Liel and Lisa, but...
Well, thank you.
Now that we're talking about it, but apparently you have like a year...
The registry's still up, right? Okay. Get Stephanie and Ben. Seriously.
So if you guys could just wait like 5 minutes.
How are we still talking about this wedding? I don't understand.
In my household, Ellie has taken up rock climbing, the 8-year-old, which prompts the question, can Jews rock climb?
I mean, it depends on who's chasing them. But.
because she also does gymnastics. And of course, Ali Raisman is very important to her as, you know, a symbol of Jewish gymnastical power. And now she's taking up rock climbing. Her thing is she likes doing sports that don't involve other people. Really? No, she, like Rebecca likes sports that are team oriented and social. And Ellie likes sports where she's just competing against herself.
So she is the wrong daughter started fencing, basically.
I think that's why Rebecca didn't take defense. So is that why you liked fencing? Because it was like all about...
Well, you could stab people. Right. And yeah.
And get away with
it.
And
you didn't have to talk to anyone.
Look, before we get to News of the Jews, there's one other thing I have to get off my chest. I'm probably not the only person in this room who reads the wedding pages in the Sunday Times, right? I'm just going to venture that somebody else in this room is going to know what I'm talking about.
Round of applause for those.
So the vows column this past Sunday... You may remember it was the modern Orthodox rabbi who met his beshert, Avital Zipper. Someone here knows. Who knows Avital? Somebody knows Avital, right? Yes, there we go. All right. And I just love being in a room like, I knew to a certainty that
so
somebody here knew Tali Zipper.
Were you at the wedding?
No. How do you know her? Friends of friends. Okay.
It's amazing.
So, and you know, it's basically this beautiful story. He goes on, was it Tinder? Yes. Yeah, he goes on. All of you go there. So he goes on Tinder and he meets her, and this is, and she's obviously lovely and he's great and we wish them nothing but happiness, right? But he mentioned to the reporter that he'd always had trouble finding, you know, dates never went well before. I think I wrote this down because yes, he said. So here he is. He's a young modern Orthodox rabbi, Andrew Scheer. He's a chaplain for the VA and for the Department of Corrections. Like, he's basically the best guy in the world.
He's the best rabbi.
And he said it was always hard for him to meet women. And here's the quote. He said, the girls I was meeting were lovely, but they were expecting a doctor or a lawyer. Being a rabbi really impeded my dating life. And I just read this and I thought, what is wrong with Jews? Seriously, or like, what is wrong with people? Like, he's obviously the best human being in the world. And they're like, he's not a dermatologist.
See, I read that and I wonder, like, what would the rabbi's dating profile be like? It's like modern Orthodox in the streets, Reconstructionist in the sheets. You know, like, what is that like? There's also another built-in problem here, which is...
Oh, is
which
there?
Yes, there is. If you're signing up for this and you're marrying a rabbi, you become a...
A Rebbetzin.
Yeah. Which, and I'm sorry, I mean no disrespect, but Rebbetzin is the least sexy word ever uttered by mankind. You don't want to tell a woman that one day she could be a Rebbetzin. We need a better term. We need to brand this a
little
bit.
But I don't think it's crazy that a woman would be like, oh, you're a rabbi. I don't, like, that could be a deal breaker for some people. And there's nothing wrong with them for that. I mean, the assumption that they were in fact looking for a doctor or a lawyer, I don't know. Maybe he's making that leap.
Right.
It seems like.
Right. Maybe it's like they didn't want to be public figures who were married, who's being awakened at 2 in the morning.
Like, your Saturdays are sort of like booked for life.
It's like, yeah.
And if he watches football, you're like screwed on Sundays too. Just being practical.
Fair enough.
I don't want anyone who will disappear for the entire of Tishrei.
All right. In the news of the Jews, let's see. God, so much good stuff. In England, white supremacist Kevin Wilshaw has quit the National Front white supremacy organization, admitting that he is gay and is Jewish on his mother's side. He told England's Channel 4 that, quote, I found on one or two occasions when I was suspected of being gay, I was subjected to abuse.
These are my favorite stories.
You know, it turns out the Nazis are not big fans of gays and Jews.
Not such nice people.
No, I was misinformed about that.
I like the casualness with which he's just like, eh, so it didn't work. I realized it wasn't my people. I realized it wasn't my calling. He's
She's like, I gave it a shot and it just like didn't work out for us.
I'm going to grow my hair out now. A little Drake news. Should I turn to our Drake correspondent? What was the news in Drakedom this week, Stephanie?
Drake turned 31 and had the reverse bar mitzvah party, like 31-13, you know, you get it, as one does. This is actually his second fake bar mitzvah because he did a music video about his bar mitzvah. And then there was his actual bar mitzvah. And it's like, he's a little obsessed.
I just love the idea of a reverse bar mitzvah. It's like at 13, I became a man. Now I'm 31. I've had my fill. Like today, I'm actually no longer an adult. So
it's like the ultimate millennial move. Right. Being like,
basically, I'm moving him back in with my parents.
Not fasting on Yom Kippur.
Not fasting on Yom Kippur. And
Bar Raffaele gave birth to a second daughter whose name is Elle. The classic Israeli model name Elle. Like, okay, so Liel means
I was born in the 70s and my parents drank a lot. It also means I have a God.
I have a God, right?
So she's just El. She's God, then, if you're I have a God.
Yes.
And she's just half of that. El. That's how Hebrew works, right?
Is it reading that way in Hebrew? As if you're El in Hebrew, are people just like, you named your daughter God?
I don't think it does in her case. I will say that people are being very unkind to her. There's a very kind of revolting debate on Israeli internet about her breastfeeding habits, because she posted a photo on Instagram of a bottle of Similac and a glass of wine.
Ooh.
And she might as well have posted a photo of herself with like the Hezbollah flag and like three burning Bibles. Like people are like, you know who breastfeed? Gal Gadot breastfeed.
While filming Wonder Woman.
Liel, as our Anne Frank correspondent, I think you should present the next bit of news of the Jews, because you've been really on top. I mean, as our sports correspondent and our Anne Frank correspondent.
I have been following the story very, very closely.
Tell us what's going on.
So there are two Italian soccer teams, or they adorably call it football. Both are in Rome, both share a stadium. And fans of one team, Lazio, or Stephanie, what's the team's full name?
It's apparently SS Lazio, none of this should surprise you.
So SS Lazio, which you know, a little bit more red Rome, kind of don't like the Roma fans, who are a little bit more blue Rome. And so to taunt them, because obviously the greatest taunt is to call someone a dead Jewish teenager, they printed out stickers of Anne Frank wearing the opposite team's uniform.
Ooh.
So this got to the attention of the Italian Soccer Federation, which, by the way, nothing delights me more than thinking of the Italian Soccer Federation, because I'm imagining like one part Godfather, three parts The Muppets, right? So the thing that they came with is, first of all, we will begin every game in the league in its entirety by reading sections from Anne Frank's diary.
In Italian.
The best thing is like, dear diary, it turns out that people are basically good, except for soccer fans. Fuck those guys. But then Lazio, not to be outdone, is like, no, we disgraced her wearing the other team's uniform. We need to repent. So they went out and designed their own uniform featuring a photo of...
Dear Anne, my number one fan. I write with the light from the lamp on my nightstand, with my pen in my right hand, and that's also my mic hand. Codeine in the Sprite can, ink on the white pad, and I'm thinking of life, and I'm wrong and right, and sometimes I'm right, and sometimes I might. I cannot find the light, still my rhymes are bright, so I continue my plan, and I'm sure like white sand.
We have some announcements to make. First of all, Liel, you have a very important athletics-related announcement that does not involve a photoshopped face of Anne Frank on a polyester jersey.
So this Sunday, along with 60,000 of my brothers and sisters, and along with my beautiful wife, Lisa, I will be running the New York City Marathon, which now, thank you very much.
Wait, I didn't... Lisa, you're running the marathon too?
Lisa is.
All right, I didn't know.
Lisa will actually be running the marathon.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
I would sort of be like slouching the marathon or stumbling the marathon. But here's the point. So the marathon has an application on your cellular telephone in which you could trace runners as they go through the course. And again, I'm going to be doing this at a very slow pace. So if you're so inclined, kindly look me up and come out and take And this is where we get gross. Come out and take a smelfie with me, which is a selfie with a guy who just ran 26 miles.
Now, where will we post those photos if you send them to us? As it happens, we are finally getting with the 21st century. We're starting our own Facebook group, which we're really, really excited about. So obviously, Tablet has a Facebook page, but we are starting a unorthodox group within the Tablet page. So if you go to Tablet Magazine on Facebook and look under groups, you will see Unorthodox Podcast. And basically, it will be a closed group. You have to ask to join, but we will say yes, and you will be in it until we throw you out for being an abusive troll. But the hope is that of our many, you know, thousands and thousands of subscribers and regular listeners, that a whole bunch of them will be there. And we're going to, you know, in the past, I'll just say for myself, we haven't done a lot of extras on the Tablet webpage because it's all Tablet. So it includes people who tune in just because they like something that they read, but they don't even know what a podcast is, right? So there's no point in giving them lots and lots of extra podcast content. This is going to be a closed group of people who are interested in the podcast. And so we're going to read extra letters that didn't make it necessarily on the air, and we're going to have extra photographs. And also, but most importantly, we're going to have discussion. So the discussion thread will be stuff that was on the show. We hopefully will get a lot of our guests, our Jews and Gentiles of the Week, to join in.
So I know, Mark, you're going to get a live video with like four daughters.
Yeah.
Probably like seven times a day.
Pretty much. There are going to be a lot of like little girls reading your letters. So if that interests
that's
you.
That's so exploitative, but I love it so much. So,
yeah. The third announcement for now is that we also, as you know, if you're regular listeners, we often get questions in the mailbox that aren't responses to things we've said, but asking the request for advice. People will say, like, what do you think? You know, I'm dating someone who says such and such. What should I tell her? Or I'm invited to this kind of party and I've never been to that. What should I wear? Or like, you know, my last name is such and such. What do you think it means? People who want us to give them advice, weirdly enough. We're going to dedicate some upcoming shows to just answering your questions where you specifically ask for advice, to advice segments. If you have a question for those episodes, write to us at the normal mailbox, unorthodox@tabletmag.com, but put advice in the subject line, and we're going to collate those and do some fun shows with those.
All right, our Jewish guest this week is writer and human guinea pig AJ Jacobs. He's the author of books like the best-selling Year of Living Biblically and the about-to-be-published book It's All Relative, in which he becomes obsessed with genealogy and attempts to convene the largest family reunion ever. AJ, welcome to the show.
Yeah! First ever Jew of the Week back for a repeat visit.
This was, yes, I was a huge moment in my life. The first guest on the first episode of Unorthodox. And I was actually listening to it, and I got very nostalgic because those were simpler times. I mean, the big horrifying news of the week was that Adam Sandler's Pixels opened and to not very good reviews, and you guys spent a long time talking
about
that.
Nothing worse will ever happen in Hollywood ever. No one in Hollywood will ever behave so badly, right?
AJ, your new book is It's All Relative. You become obsessed with genealogy. This is actually not the first time you've become like super into something.
That is kind of my job.
Yeah, that's your thing. The Year of Living Biblically was you followed every single biblical commandment.
Right.
In the know-it-all, you read the entire Encyclopedia Britannica.
Exactly. A to Z.
And so like, why genealogy? How'd you get into this?
Well, this started, as I might have mentioned on episode one, if you go back, I got an email out of the blue from this man in Israel, and he said, "You don't know me, but I'm your eighth cousin." And naturally, I thought, as you probably would, that he was going to ask, please send $10,000 to my Nigerian bank. But it turned out he was legit, and he's part of this group of people who are obsessed with building a family tree. But it's not a tree. It's like forest. It's like the biggest tree ever. And it's not thousands of people, it's millions of people. So literally, there are about 200 million people on this tree, including some people sitting on this stage right now.
Bum, bum, bum.
I know it's a shock since I sent it to you earlier, but it is.
Should we talk about?
I think I'm ready to.
How so?
You're ready to reveal this?
All right.
This delighted me, by the way, because AJ really is one of my absolute favorite people. And this news really touches me.
Now we are officially Mishpucha.
We're officially family.
I mean, basically this tree is like the greatest game of Jewish geography ever.
So let's do the reveal. This is like Maury.
Yeah.
Okay. Here we go. Are you ready to weep? Mark Oppenheimer is my second great uncle's first cousin. Thrice removed.
Woo! Thrice removed.
That's my great grandma's sister married your something.
That's like a pretty close connection, right?
We're practically brothers.
It's because that's why I'm so tall.
Right. Well, I mean, the thing is that Jews were a highly endogamous population, which is a very polite way of saying we were inbreeders. And some of us still are. I am. And we did a DNA test. My wife and I did a DNA test, and it came back that we are cousins, like blood cousins. And I actually was excited. I was like, this is so cool. And it's like a scary Game of Thrones.
You kind of say, like, this is, you thought this could be kind of hot.
Yeah, I was like, spice up my marriage. She was not as into it. But it's more six. I do have a chapter in the book where I talk to this man who heads up CousinCouples.com. And see, there you go. They are, he is fighting for the rights of first cousins to get married. He sees it as like marriage equality part two. It's really quite
interesting. That is such a weird.
Next week on Unorthodox, the founder of Cousin Couples.
I feel like everyone here has like that second, like everyone has the cousin. Like, don't, we have someone like, married a second, like right then. You
and
know,
great, my great grandpa married his first cousin. Oh, yeah, there's like back then, that's what you did. And apparently, still now, some people.
Are you closer to your wife than Mark?
I don't know.
Like, because that would seem like a close connection for two random people.
That's true.
For two Ashkenazi Jews, and so not that random, but.
We have to do the DNA. I want to know. I want to know whether I can marry you or not legally.
I think you can marry me,
right?
Because we have more. Oh, yeah. We have more stops.
Yeah.
But one of them is way cooler than
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. That's right.
Doing some name dropping. It is Leal is my sixth cousin, once removed's wife's second great nephew. And and it goes back to a man named Shlomo Zalman Vilner.
Of course it does.
Right. AKA or DBA. Just the Vilna Gaon, no big deal.
No, that's just son number five of Vilna Gaon.
That's all good, still counts. It's like George Foreman Jr. It's like, it's one of those.
The Vilna Gaon, he was a famous rabbi and in Lithuania, I think 19th century, 18th century. And what I learned, I knew very little about him except that he was like, you know, he's a legend.
Mocker.
He was a mocker. He studied. He slept for 4 hours a night and the rest of the time he was studying. But I actually, I went to...
The rest of the night time, by the way, I'm totally studying. That's what I do.
But I went to a lecture by the guy who wrote the biography on him, whose basic thesis was he was kind of a dick. Like, he literally talked about that. Like, he would go off and study and totally ignore his family, including his son who had some terrible disease. And he would go off for months and only remember, you're only allowed to think, when you're in the bathroom, you cannot think of Torah, apparently. So that was the only time he's like, oh, yeah, I got these kids. Maybe I should go see them. And then finally, after months, he's like, returns. This is very sad because Stephanie, I spent quite a bit of time searching for buttnicks on the internet. And
be careful when you do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I wasn't going to make
like, don't
that
do
joke.
It at work.
It's like, I'm glad you made the joke. But yeah, and I think you might be the only Jewish person I am not related to.
I have to say that's like a pretty big deal for me. Because you're actually related to everyone, right? Like you've got some famous relatives that you've unearthed in the process of writing this book.
No, we are related. It's just going to take me a few days to figure out. Don't worry, you can't escape.
So we're the most famous. Who else are you related to who is also kind of famous?
Well, there's, you know, Barack Obama is my fifth great aunt's husband's brother's wife's seventh great nephew. So I got him. I got... Jeffrey Dahmer.
Another illustrious.
I will say he's on my wife's side, so I want to make that clear. So yeah, and I have to be very careful around my wife, because now that I know.
So what happened with the reunion? You know, the book tells the story of you discovering genealogy, sort of being swept in by this guy, basically who gets you, right?
Right.
Like the ultimate long con is you actually become obsessed with genealogy and want to throw the world's biggest family reunion.
That was it. I decided I have millions of cousins. Why not throw a party for all of my cousins, all 7 billion? And so I did about a year and a half ago in Queens. We threw a family reunion. We did not get 100% attendance, but we got about 4,000. We got 10,000 around the world. There were 40 simultaneous reunions. And it was the weirdest event. First of all, I hated it because I was so stressed out and miserable.
You were like, is everyone going to have a good time?
Exactly.
Well, you realized it was like a massive family reunion.
Right.
That was your idea.
What was I thinking? That is terrible.
I see your one drunk, obnoxious uncle, and I raise you 3,800 of them.
But I will say it was the weirdest, because it was the most diverse. It was like, you know, you had a rabbi, of course. There was a minister, a Buddhist monk, an atheist, and they all gave little talks. There was...
they all literally walked into a bar.
That, exactly. It was like... you had Mary Lou Henner. I don't know why, but she was there. And Sister Sledge actually came and
Sister
sang.
Sledge came and sang, "We Are Family."
We are family.
Was the whole Sledge there?
No,
all three of them?
They have like a big family feud. It turns out, right?
Oh yeah, this was a very sad part of the book. Is that
one of them left to join the Pointer Sisters, right?
They defected. No, I was all excited. I thought I was getting Sister Sledge, but it turns out I was getting like maybe 50% of Sister Sledge, because one of the sisters went solo and they sued each other. And, ooh, you know, their shtick is, "We are family. We love each other." I was like, I think there might be some irony there.
It would be like if Kool and the gang refused to celebrate. So in the book, you talk at one point about how you do have these sort of touchingly sweet aspirations that genealogy might promote world peace.
Well, that's it. I mean, it is a little Woodstockian, but there are studies. There is a study done by Harvard. That's a real place. Last year that said they took a group of Palestinians and Israelis, and they told one half of the group that they were very closely related. They sort of made up a DNA, and then the other half that they weren't. And there was a very significant difference in behavior, that they were much more willing to cooperate and much less willing to do sadistic things to each other. So I thought that was, you know, that's very hopeful. Who knows? And I will say, you brought up the white supremacist earlier. I mean, that is...
Former white supremacist.
I'm sorry.
Ex-white supremacist. Yeah.
Thank God.
He read A.G.'s book. He was like, wait a minute.
Exactly.
I'm related to these people.
See? Right. One of the positives is having these white supremacists get their DNA tested and freaking out because they find that they are actually part Jewish or part African-American. And... And there was a study by these UCLA professors about, they looked at all of these alt-right websites where people were getting their results back, and they were free. They were accusing like 23andMe of being this multicultural conspiracy, that they were foisting these false results on them. But hopefully, you know, it will make people realize that really racial purity is a crock. It's not true.
I have to tell you that I joined because I read your book, and you know, I had already done myheritage.com, and actually they've sent kits to all of us at Unorthodox. On an upcoming show, we are going to reveal just how Jewish we are.
I'm apparently not, so.
By the way,
guys.
I'm like 97% Jewish and 2.5% Arab. So I've got like the Middle East conflict right in my body.
Right in your body.
So are you sadistic to yourself, or are you nicer to yourself because you have both?
Well, now that I realize how related I am to myself, I'm much kinder to myself.
So I'm sitting there. So I realized I had to join the others. I had to join, you know, I was on MyHeritage. I had joined 23andMe and Genie. Like, if I wanted to integrate everything, I thought I'll just keep spending money and keep signing up. And so I'm sitting there doing genie.com today. And Anna, my four-year-old, climbs up on the sofa and says, what you doing, Daddy? And I said, well, I'm looking up people whom I'm related to. And she said, are they people you know? And I said, no. And she said, are there people you're going to meet? And I said, no. And she said, are they alive? And I said, not all of them. And she said, that's stupid.
Well, kid, let me tell you about Facebook.
That's right. I mean, and I will say that, like, your book actually made a stronger case for genealogy than ever had been made to me before, because it is sometimes the province of, what's the Yiddish word? Annoying people.
Yeah. Well, it is interesting. Yeah, I mean, it. And when our country started, they hated the idea of genealogy because it's aristocratic, it's British. So it's actually, you know, kind of un-American when you first look at it. But now it's been turned on its head, and it's all about, like, inclusion, and we're all one big family. So so now it's been democratized. And it is also interesting because part of my family were hardcore assimilators. They were like, really? My grandfather was the token Jew at one of the waspiest country clubs in America. And I would always fantasize, I would go there. I always wanted to wear like a kippah with like pink and green plaid and like little whales on it and see how that went. But this was an exciting moment for our family. Is he was very involved in the civil rights movement, and he was one of Martin Luther King Jr.'s lawyers. And he was honored at this gala, and LBJ, the president, spoke at it and thanked my grandfather for working so hard. He said, and he even works on Sundays when he should be at church. So
he'd arrived.
I was forcibly converted by by the president of the United States. That was exciting. That is hardcore.
That is hardcore
assimilation right there.
AJ Jacobs, the book is It's All Relative. Can you hang out to sign people's copies afterwards?
It's not even out yet. It's like you guys are getting the early taste.
Your first official sale will be tonight.
This is should all buy it. Right, like as soon as we're done.
He's your cousin. You have to.
He's your cousin.
By the way, it's like the best like sales mechanism I've ever heard. Yeah. Would it kill you to support your relatives?
Right. Thank you, Stephanie.
For cousins, you've got to pay retail, is the way I always say it.
There you go.
AJ Jacobs, everyone.
Yes!
Thank you.
Okay, so I thought we're going to have a couple rounds of this, but at our last live show, we had a Gal Gadot action figure, right? A Wonder Woman action figure. And we found someone who, we said, who here has a connection to Gal Gadot? What was the person's connection?
The sister of the army person who trained with her at the hummus stand.
I would say afterwards, ridiculous. I heard a better story from someone who was also here, who like didn't raise her hand in time. But it was sitting on a plane next to Gal Gadot's nanny while they were all going to Israel.
Ooh, that's
and then
good.
Like her son spent the week with Gal Gadot's also, nanny. It was plane, like actually a really great story.
Also, the plane was invisible.
So here's the thing. We're just going to give you some Jews. And if you have a connection, and you know, if it's a good one, it's a good one. But if it's tangential, you might win something. So here's the game we're going to play. First of all, who here has a connection of any kind?
Any connection at all.
Any connection at all. Aside from just knowing who it is or having seen him on TV. There we go. Thank you for the lights. To Milton Berle.
Okay, who here knows who that is? Okay.
All right, we'll try another
AJ
one.
AJ has one.
Who here has a connection?
AJ says
this is about 15 years ago. I went to cover Milton Berle doing stand-up in Long Island somewhere, and he was 92, and he made a dick joke about me. It was like one of the most historic moments of my life. He said my pants were too tight and he could tell that I was circumcised or something like that.
Wow.
I mean, it wasn't very funny.
No.
No, but you know. But it was interesting that he was talking about my private parts when he had such legendary.
A famous cross-dresser, Milton Berle.
I feel like AJ wins that round. Yeah,
if you want some sweat. All right, well, let's try it. All right, who here has a connection to, or the close connection to, Jared Kushner?
Oh,
okay,
wow.
What's your connection?
Oh, wait.
Wait, what's your connection to Jared Kushner?
My brother used his like science textbook in high school.
It said, oh, I love that.
At Frisch in New Jersey?
Frisch, yeah.
That's amazing.
That's good.
We have one more. We have to see.
Can anyone top that?
Oh, wait, there's someone.
Wait, someone's topping it?
Wait, I'm going to pass the mic down. I sat on the young leadership of the Friends of the IDF board with him.
I like the IDF. I'm still going to go with textbook.
I'm going with the textbook. Yeah, that's pretty good.
All right, our Gentile of the Week is actor Kobe Labee, currently appearing on Comedy Central's new show, The Opposition with Jordan Klepper. You may also recognize him as Cantor Duvid from the Amazon series Transparent. Welcome, Kobe. So we'll get to your current work, but obviously given our crowd here, let's talk about Transparent, right? Sure. Like, can we get a sense of the crowd? Yes. Cantor Duvid, how did you get the role of... an enigmatic, widowed Cantor, newly back from Israel, love interest, like...
Well, it's how I see myself. some people, they say, senators wake up in the morning and look in the mirror and see the president. I wake up in the morning, look in the mirror, and see a mournful Cantor.
Well, it's funny because Catherine Hahn's been on the show, and she is the other spiritual leader, like the only religious figure, and she's also not Jewish.
Yeah, I was very comforted by that. I was like, okay, if my baseline as an actor is feeling like a complete fraud the whole time. So I was like, okay, great. There's at least one other fraud here with me.
Like, the Gentiles on the show are you and her, and then the Duplass brother is who everyone thinks is Jewish, right, is not a Jew. But otherwise, it's pretty much Petach Tikva.
So how do you prepare for that role? You were speaking Hebrew. You were, like, really into it.
Yeah.
Who here thought he was Jewish? Let's just do this. Oh, we're clapping
I'll
for thinking
that.
You're Jewish.
So, I'd love to hear the answer, but like, it's amazing to me because you know that your name, if you move to Israel with your name, you either become the commander of like an infantry brigade or you get like a grilled meats restaurant or both. I mean, it's kind of the most quintessential Israeli name.
I would pick both, personally. It's funny because the only people I've met whose names are K-O-B-I spelled the way mine is spelled are Kobe is usually from Israel, usually short for Jacob or Jacob, you know. And, so I definitely get that. My particular name is West African, though. It's from a language called Bisa. My full name is Bikobi, B-I-K-O-B-I. But it's everyone, including my parents, shorten it to Kobe all the time. And it's just a cultural, a bit of bizarro cultural symmetry that it happens to track as a, name common in that tradition.
And so how do you become a chazan? How do you prepare for this?
Well, first I had to find out what that word meant, which I still, what is a chazan? Forgive my ignorance.
A Cantor.
A Cantor. Oh, yeah. No, I did. Guys, I did a lot of research. I did, and it's funny, because I shot that about a year and a half ago at this point, so a lot of my memories of the details and the sort of specific traditions will be more sort of impressionistic than encyclopedic.
There are, in fact, many Jewish men who learn a lot, and they perform it before a lot of people, and then a year and a half later, when they're, say, 14 and a half, they've actually forgotten all of it. Like, this is actually an experience not foreign to many people in this room.
So you're saying I was bar mitzvahed.
Basically,
that's what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying.
That's brilliant. I spent a lot of time. There's a rabbi consultant on the show, which I don't know if...
Really?
We've
got to get that person on our show.
She's completely brilliant. Is a rabbi at a temple in Los Angeles, and that the temple in that show is not modeled on, but they definitely pull some similarities from. I spent a lot of time with her, went to, a number of services of hers, talked to not the cantors from that temple, but there's a very informal sort of recruit the young people service that they host that has some musicians who are very faithful, faithful folks, but aren't formally cantors. I spent a lot of time with them.
So they made moves on you is what you're saying?
They tried to recruit me.
Come on Shabbat. You like it.
That sort of young hip people service is a very, it's wonderful. It's intimate, but it's very small. So it was definitely an event that there was a new guy that showed up. That happened. So I spent a lot of time with them, and then spoke to a cantor from a very progressive congregation back here as well. I was, as I said, I was so concerned about not being a fraud, but, you know, anytime you are representing a cultural tradition that is really important to people who are of that tradition and it is not your tradition, you don't have the same authority and license that you would have for something you had more ownership of. So I spent a lot of that was the sort of research you would usually do as an actor, but it's also part abject terror at being disrespectful to a tradition that, I wasn't really a part of.
Although kind of you are now, because it's the most Jewish show in the history of television. I mean, it's actually the only show that what I say about it is it's the only show that shows like Judaism as something that like, it's first of all, it's a Jewish family, right? Yeah. Where they're all Jews and they all have a lot of the same internal stress about it, questions, ambivalence that a lot of Jews have, but then they still practice a good bit of the time. Like they still will light Shabbat candles and they'll still do the holidays. And that sort of tension, but they muddle through it and keep doing it is something you don't see on TV. You see like sitcom characters who are Jewish, but do nothing. And then once in a while you get an Orthodox family. But that thing that's kind of in the middle is, I don't think it's ever been done on TV before until Transparent. So, it's, you know, so thanks, man.
No problem. It's like, anytime I can make a profound contribution like that, I'll be there.
You're the only cantor also. Also, there's never a cantor. There are rabbis, but like Seinfeld's had a lot of rabbis.
Yeah. Has there ever been like a cantor? Cantor's like a deep cut.
Yeah,
I have a tremendous amount of respect for the couple of folks that I spent time with researching for their, you know, artistry was sort of one of my connections to it, you know, and finding something, you know, metaphysical in music and finding, you know, a ritual through music that could exist beyond text and exist in a way that was really moving and visceral for people.
How did you study for the part where you're absolutely terrible in bed?
That was ripped more from, I had more authority on that.
I want to ask about the opposition. There seems something both really kind of enticing, but also immensely cosmically depressing about doing a sort of show that tracks this shitstorm we're in right now.
Yeah.
Like, how do you process it? Be like, yes, I'm going to do this really incredibly funny bit, although when you read the headlines, they seem like way more absurd than anything any writer could come up with.
It's hard. It's definitely hard to outflank our current political moment for absurdity. That's a challenge that satirists find right now. We're not want of things to criticize and sort of rot that deserves a mirror held up to it, though. So that's the upshot for my work. I'd say the most on the opposition specifically, the world we're parodying most directly is the world of far. It's not even fair to call them alt-right, they're not even on the political spectrum. But you know, Alex Jones. Sort of full conspiracy theorist, toxic, crazy folks sort of out that end of talk radio. And, you know, to do that satire effectively, you're watching the sort of mainstream headlines, but then you're also sort of steeping yourself in the world of those delightful minds. And that's honestly the most toxic part for me personally, is listening to a half an hour to an hour of Alex Jones every day.
What's your favorite conspiracy theory?
You know, God.
And then can you make a follow-up question? Can you make up one up right now?
That's what I do constantly.
Let's get something started.
That's what I do constantly. I mean,
let me give you a sentence and you finish it.
Great, let's do
the
it.
The Jews are responsible for?
Employment.
I would say, so as the Gentile of the week, I'm going to be incredibly delicate here and say only good things. That's called pandering.
That is a conspiracy theory.
Yeah, no, but we're constantly doing that. My favorite actual conspiracy theory. I mean, my favorites are the ones that just sort of collapse on themselves, sort of instantly. What was I listening to today? There's a lot of some of the best stuff from Alex Jones is this New World Order stuff.
Yes.
That imagines a global conspiracy. That's particularly funny for me to imagine because going to, you know, a place like Yale, I've met a lot of people that ended up in politics that are in the halls of power and running around. They're just not smart enough to run a conspiracy like that. Like, it's just like, once you know those people, it's, you know, one of my friends says that, you know, government is like, you know, it's like 90% Parks and Rec, only 10% House of Cards, you know? And And I always find that really credible with my experience. It's like, yeah, it's mostly the same fools that work in your office or your whatever, sort of bumbling around as effectually as the people around you are. They just happen to have more influence on geopolitics, you know? And so the idea that there is some master plan and it's locked in a room of 15 people, it's like, no, I know the idiots that are in those rooms. I went to school with them. I watched them like fall over drunk. They're not capable of pulling it off.
So what's your release from politics? Like, what do you listen to? Like, what do you do on a weekend?
I've been listening to a podcast about the history of Rome, which is exciting. Guys, I'm really cool. You're gonna learn this. I play a lot of.
Wait, a city that was never grabbed by a complete lunatic that burned it to the ground.
But it feels really
that
distant.
That never happened there.
Yeah, it's like the lunacy of that leadership feels like quaint and far away. And I'm a board game head. I play a lot of really oppressively nerdy board games. And I was just I love mixing cocktails is one of my hobbies. So coming backstage and being instantly offered mezcal was very nice.
And you just got married 2 weeks ago.
I did just get married 2 weeks ago. Yeah,
Mazel Tov, as our people would say.
Thank you. Thank you.
Small intimate gathering, was it?
It's 130. Is that break intimate?
He's asking why he wasn't invited.
Yeah.
But if he was, he wouldn't send a gift. So
I'm not.
Don't worry about it.
Gentile of the week, Kobe Labee. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, everybody.
Hey, before you go, where else can they see you? Like, what's the thing that they don't know about that's not this or Transparent that you're really proud of?
Besides the board games.
Yeah, goodness. I mean, this is sort of the big project that's blotting out the sky right now. There's a couple other things that are, you know, sort of floating around the world and the internet that you can see me in. My general rule is if you see someone on screen and it looks like me, it's me. Just check out The Opposition, Comedy Central, 11:30s, Monday through Thursday.
All right, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
We're excited to announce Tablet's first ever essay competition, First Personal. Our editors are looking for previously unpublished work by writers living in North America who have never written for Tablet before. They are seeking submissions on the theme of belonging. Where do you feel at home or no longer at home, physically, spiritually, or culturally? How do you find community or a sense that you're a part of something larger than yourself? Are there places where you feel a sense of belonging or alienation or both? Tablet is seeking personal essays about your life and your experiences and how your thoughts and feelings have evolved over time. Tablet editors will review all submissions and choose their favorite 5, which they will edit with the writers. The authors of those 5 pieces will be brought to New York City to read their story in front of a live audience. A guest judge will then select the winner. The winning essay will be published in Tablet and the winner will receive $500. For more information and to submit your essay, please visit tabletmag.com/essay contest.
Listen, we have a very important bit of mail to get to before we wrap up the show. A few weeks ago, you may have heard did one of us say?
I think it was you, and I think you said mishmash, and then someone wrote in being like, I can't believe he said mishmash,
I corrected.
It's mishmash, and I was like, it's mishmash, and you're like, it's mishmash. Right. Is this a good explanation of this?
If you think boycott, divest, and sanction gets mail, if you think Trump gets mail, if you think Cleveland bagels versus Montreal bagels versus New York bagels gets mail, uh-uh. This is just a minor selection of the letters we got. I am writing from Ann Arbor to add to the great mishmash pronunciation debate. I'm a robotics PhD student at the University of Michigan, and for many years, Michigan Hillel's weekly newsletter has been known as the Mishmash. Get it? From Michigan? Many people in this community pronounce the second syllable of the newsletter's name just as Stephanie and Mark say it. While I'm writing this letter, I also want to share that I was walking across the Michigan campus listening to Unorthodox for the first time, and I froze when I heard Stephanie talk about her time at Duke. I went to Duke for undergrad, and when I was on the Duke Hillel student board, I had Google Alerts set up to hear news stories about the Duke Jewish alumni. Unfortunately, the keywords Duke, Jewish, brought forward a lot of news articles about David Duke, and only... and only the occasional story about someone like Duke Jewish alum Marshall Rausch, who was the largest Christmas ornament producer in the world, and who, of course, has been on our show, podcast. Right? Go Blue and Go Blue Devils, Kevin Lieberman. All right, so he doesn't take a side. He just adds context. We got a letter from Lisa Last of Great Neck, who makes it into a Jew-Gentile thing. Dear Unorthodox, I had never heard anything but mishmash all of my childhood. I've lived outside New York and away from most fellow members of the tribe since college, but still never heard anything else until a few years ago, when I read an article that happened to mention the Yiddish origin of mishmash and how the mosh versus mash was a Jewish Gentile indicator. Flabbergasted that anyone would say mishmash, I asked my very waspy husband if he had heard such a silly word. He promptly answered that he had never heard mosh. I too noted Mark's use of mash in that episode, but we all know about Mark. Stephanie, what's your excuse? Is it because you went to Great Neck North? Lisa Last.
I wrote her back and I was like, yeah, I have the Great Neck North dialect. East Shore Road over to Middle Neck Road. That's how we say it.
Dear Unorthodox, when I was little, maybe five, I would prep my ice cream by stirring it until it was liquid. Then I ate or drank it. That was mishmash. From the Central Jersey suburbs, fast closing in on age 65, Karen Winograd. Dear Unorthodox, it's mash like potatoes in the TV show.
It's spelled M star A star.
Sign Alan Alda.
Right. I'm a 22-year-old who grew up in northern Westchester, although the other pronunciation sounds like how my parents or grandparents might say it, and they grew up in Queens, the Bronx, Brooklyn. Jonathan Karsh. Dear Unorthodox, really, Stephanie? Mishmash? Growing up in Brooklyn and Queens in the 50s, it was always mishmash. Maybe it morphed when you were growing up on Long Island in the 80s, but I never heard it pronounced that way.
It's like, let's be honest, it was the 90s. But I did know what MASH was. No one knew it. No one was like impressed by that.
The TV show?
Yeah. Well done. Thank you, TV
I
man.
Like the ethnic divisions, like you from Long Island North.
How could you not know
How
better?
How could you be so
That letter
ignorant.
Was from our frequent correspondent, Jeffrey Grossman, by the way. All right, we're closing in. Dear Unorthodox, hi, first time listener, and I ran into the mishmash controversy. Could you imagine being a first time listener? Like, this is what they do? I'm 62, grew up in Forest Hills in Queens, and never heard the MASH pronounced with an A sound as in lamb. That pronunciation might even be fake news. Best Ellen Levy. Andy Oram writes, you haven't committed the entirety of Leo Rostin's Joys of Yiddish to memory yet. Quite a lapse, and that would keep you from stumbling over the pronunciation mishmash. But he doesn't say which one Leo Rostin has it as.
I think he says
You think
it.
He says? All
Even
right.
more important than Leo Rostin, someone I believe on Twitter, that infinite fount of human wisdom
yep.
Said that Ros Chast pronounces it mash. And as Ros Chast is pretty much like a Jewish pope, she's infallible in my eyes.
There we go.
Fellas.
QED.
I think I win here.
Fine. Well,
but,
you know.
Since we have a whole room full of Jews.
We have one final letter to go, and then we will take it to the audience. I got to get to Juna, because she wrote from Berlin. Being German, I know it's hard enough for Germans to believe we're still existing, let alone you guys probably wondering, why would a Jewess still live there? Let me tell you, I have absolutely no idea. I'm still finding out. I love this woman. Anyway, back to the mishmash, which would be written mishmash with lots of C's in German. It comes from the word mischen, which means mixing. So it's a double mish. But who cares? Language is just a mishmash in general, isn't it? Shalom from Berlin, Juna Grossmann. So, Juna.
That was like the least mean letter to me, so.
Yeah, it was like it wasn't about you at all.
As I said, I have a few fans, but they're violent. That counts for a lot.
Does anyone have anything to add? We wanted to take this to you. People seem to have a lot of opinions on this.
Let's get a vote.
Jira has the microphone.
Before we do, I want like a sound check. Clap as hard as you can if you think it's mishmash.
Yes. Yes, as they say.
All right, now, clap.
By the way, I just want to point out that your wife is clapping, Leo.
I understand that. Now, clap as hard as you can if you're correct in thinking it's mishmash. You're smart, wonderful people.
I should point out here that both my parents and my in-laws just clapped for mishmash. So it's, I don't know.
You guys both got sold out.
Thank you, Butniks.
I think it's a German versus Ostjuden thing. Like, nobody in my family would say, I've never heard mishmash.
I think it doesn't exist. A Florida thing.
Florida, orange. Who here has an opinion? Does anyone want to weigh in at all? Or were they all exhausted by the letter writers?
Oh,
yes, we have someone right here. Wait, give us your name and tell us what you think.
And just Hi. Don't yell at me.
Never. My name's Annie. And I was just thinking while you were talking that the Israeli food, nishnosh, is like mishmash. And I was like, well, that makes sense. Yeah, but I always said mishmash, but that might be an Australian thing.
Interesting addition to the debate.
Can we get AJ Jacobs? Because he read the entire Encyclopedia Britannica, and I feel like he gets to weigh in.
AJ?
Oh, that was in the M. I only remember.
I'm actually going to aver that AJ might have skimmed. I think there's some skimming going on. Do we have a final comment on the mishmash versus mishmash controversy?
Is that from Jonathan Zalman?
Jonathan Zalman.
By the way, I should say that Jonathan Zalman worked at Tablet for 2 years before anyone realized that we were pronouncing his name wrong.
It's Zalman, not Zalman. Zalman, what do you think?
So correct us again.
So just to fill me in, I imagine Mark is a mishmasher.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And Eliel, you're a masher.
In short, two wrongs and a right.
Right. So I'm a mishmasher. But apparently I'm wrong. But the only place my mind goes is splish splash. I was taking a bath.
I like that. Mostly because it...
See, I think in English it goes ish ash. I think that's right. Oh, and we have a comment here, right here, in the middle. Yes, Mrs. Liel Leibowitz.
You have to say your name.
You have to say your name and who here you're related to.
Yeah, whom you're married to. Like.
Hi, I'm Lisa. I'm here for Stephanie.
This is Liel's wife.
Oh, you are sitting in the butt.
This is Liel's wife.
I'm married to Liel. It's mishmash. I'm from Delaware. That's how we pronounce it there. But my scientific explanation is that mishmash is like you're mixing and mashing stuff together.
Yes.
And it's mash. It's like mashed potatoes. It's like hash. They rhyme. It's a mixture of stuff that you're mixing and mashing together. So it's clearly mishmash.
Thank you.
The slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
Well, you know what? It's time for the Mazel Tovs. Stephanie Butnick, what is your Mazel Tov of the week?
Okay, so one of our favorite guests, H. Allen Scott, you'll remember him. He's the subject of the documentary Latter-day Jew. He came on, he was, you remember, born Mormon, now is Jewish, has this just sort of this really amazing story, a lot of twists and turns in between. He's having his bar mitzvah is here. His bar mitzvah is November 9th in LA. And if you can't, he's invited everyone. You're all invited. We won't be there, unfortunately. But he's in lieu of gifts, I think we should all be donating to help make the documentary, you know, come to fruition and be available and be something that we can see. The place to make a tax-deductible donation is latterdayjew.com/support to help them finish the film. And I think that would be such a nice bar mitzvah gift.
I love that he set up a nonprofit to produce a documentary about his bar mitzvah. That's beautiful. Liel Leibowitz.
That's Jewish for you.
That's Jewish. Liel Leibowitz. Mazel Tov of the week.
My Mazel Tov of the week goes to a young and promising actor, Tom Hanks, who this week will return to screens everywhere in the role that made him famous, David S. Pumpkins.
That's the Mazel Tovs for him?
Yep.
It's for Tom Hanks?
You know, you got to support these struggling artists.
These struggling artists, right?
Not everyone is like, you know, big and famous on a Comedy Central TV show. Some of them are really just starting
just
out
on NBC.
In the world.
Did Israel get Bosom Buddies 1 year?
No.
You never got that?
No.
You had to catch up when you moved to America?
Did. Yeah, and that's really traumatic because if you really got a bad year, you really got a bad year.
Yeah.
You know?
My Mazel Tovs, I have two Mazel Tovs. One is, I've always wondered why aren't there really good short videos explaining Jewish stuff? Like, let's say you want to know what Shavuos is. How come nobody's made the BuzzFeed style 5-minute videos like with funny animation explaining Shavuos? And then I discovered that actually exists. And I'm sure it exists in many places, but I found the one I think is really good.
And a website called stormfront.org. Very lovely people.
And it's at bimbam.com. And I did you guys know about bimbam.com? Bim Bam. Oh, I know. If I'd thought about that, I actually would have known that one. So cheery beery to all of you. But But bimbomb.com, and I was just like, after I went, was looking at Genie, and my daughter said, that looks stupid, I was looking at BimBomb, and it's actually kind of amazing. And I'm kind of ashamed as a, you know, Jewish communal podcaster that I didn't know about it until now. So mazel tov to them. But then my other mazel tov, I've mazel tov'd my good friends, Sam Purdy and Emma Sokolov Rubin on the show before when they got married about a year ago, and they just had baby Miriam about 10 days ago. So mazel tov to them on Miriam Sokolov Purdy, on baby Miriam. Unorthodox is brought to you by Tablet Magazine, on the web at tabletmag.com. Big thanks to JCC Manhattan, our uptown home. It is also your uptown home for people watching and culture and fitness and the arts and big time Jewishness. But as for us, write to us at unorthodox@tabletmag.com. Follow Stephanie on Instagram at Subutnik. To get our special Liel Leibowitz written newsletter, sign up on our website, tabletmag.com, or send an email asking for it to unorthodox@tabletmag.com with newsletter in the subject line. Be forewarned, we may make fun of your name. Join our Facebook group. Go to Tablet Magazine and join the Facebook group, Unorthodox Podcast. This week, our show is produced by Alyssa Goldstein and Shira Talushkin with help from Julia Frakes. Our artwork is by Esther Werdiger. Our show is edited by Noah Levins, and our music is by Golem. Our rabbinic supervision was by Rabbis Linda Henry Gordon, Micah Lieben, Mara Young, and Marion. Did I get it right? Yeah? What are you laughing at? Don't mess with my mojo, okay? Our rabbinic supervision was by Linda Henry Gordon, Micah Lieben, Mara Young, and Marion Shulovitz, and we are proud to be part of the Panoply Network. Shalom, friends.
You didn't do kosher slaughtering.
What?
Yeah, it's okay.
We'll do kosher slaughtering. We'll double up on kosher slaughtering next time.
Kosher slaughtering was by Barney Greengrass, okay?
Kosher slaughtering is by Barney Greengrass.
Joke's over.
Sorry. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.